It's time you're about to open your Bible. It's the 2 Samuel chapter 15, beginning with verse 1. Okay. Again, this is 2 Samuel chapter 15, verse 1, as we continue our study of the life of King David. 2 Samuel chapter 15, beginning with verse 1. Hear now these words. After this, Absalom got himself a chariot and horses, and 50 men rode ahead of him. Absalom used to rise early and stand beside the road to the gate. And when anyone brought a suit before the king for judgment, Absalom would call out and say, "From what city are you?" When the person said, "Your servant is of such and such tribe in Israel," Absalom would say, "See, your claims are good and right, but there is no one deputed by the king to hear you." Absalom said, moreover, "If only I were a judge in the land, then all who has suitor cause might come to me, and I would give them justice." And whenever people came near to do obedience to him, he would put out his hand, and they'd take hold of them and kiss them. Thus Absalom did to every Israelite who came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the people of Israel. At the end of 4 years, Absalom said to the king, "Please let me go to Hebron and pay the vow that I made to the Lord. For your servant made a vow while I live at Geshur at Aram. If the Lord will indeed bring him back to Jerusalem, then I will worship the Lord in Hebron." The king said to him, "Go in peace." So he got up and went to Hebron. But Absalom sent secret messengers throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, "As soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then shout, 'Absalom has been made king at Hebron.'" 200 men from Jerusalem went with Absalom. They were invited guests, and they went in their innocence, knowing nothing of the matter. While Absalom was offering sacrifices, he sent for Ahithophel the Gibeonite, David's counselor from the city of Gilal. The conspiracy grew in strength, and the people with Absalom kept increasing. A messenger came to David, saying, "The hearts of Israelites had gone after Absalom." Then David said to his officials who were with him in Jerusalem, "Get up, let us flee, for there will be no escape from us from Absalom. Hurry, he will soon overtake us, and bring disaster down upon us, and attack the city with the edge of the sword." My friends, to the word of God for the people of God, thanks be to God. Now this morning, I want to talk about God's deliverance from the hands of our enemies. And this story about Absalom has its roots going all the way back to David and Bathsheba and their affair. And she conceived a son, and that son died. And the prophet Nathan warned David that the sword shall never depart your house. Then last week we saw this terrible tragedy of where David's son, Amon, had tricked David into allowing his sister, half-sister, to come to his house, prepare a meal, pretend like he was sick. And then this half-brother ended up raping his half-sister. And David did nothing about it. And so 2 years later, Absalom took upon himself and killed his half-brother and fled into exile. And so we ended last Sunday with, "And the heart of the king went out, yearning for Absalom, for he was consoled over the death of Amnon." And so in chapter 14, we have Joab. Remember, Joab's a general. He's the one who actually did the dirty work of killing Uriah the Hittite. He realized that David was still thinking about Absalom, and so he pulls a little trick on David. And I must confess, this chapter was a little hard to follow in this translation. When I read it in the New Living Translation, they had it formatted to where you see better the dialogue going back and forth to all the parties. And what happened was, Absalom went to a woman and basically paid her to be an hired actor, or actress, and said, "I want you to go to the palace and tell the king this sad story and get a response, okay?" And so she goes to King David, said, "Oh, King David, my two sons were in a fight. One son killed the other, and he fled, and now my relatives want to kill him, If he do, they do that, I won't have a son left. And the king said, your son shall live. And Elsa said, what about my relatives? And he said, send them to me. And then she says, well, king, what about you? You know, you have a son named Absalom. You know, how come you haven't brought him back? And David's like, wait a minute. This is a setup. Did Joab put you up to this? Yes, sir, he did. You know, and Joab's over there standing. And so David agrees that Absalom can come back to Jerusalem. However, listen to this. Then the king said to Joab, very well, I grant this. Go bring back the young man Absalom. And Joab fell to the ground and said, today your servant knows I have found favor in sight, my lord the king, and the king has granted the request of his servant. So Joab set off to Geshur and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. The king said, let him go to his own house. He is not to come into my presence. So Absalom went to his own house and did not come into the king's presence. So you see a little bit of grace and also some judgment here, right? Absalom can come back to Jerusalem, but I don't want to see him, not in my house. You know, and I'm kind of confused a little bit about, well, David, no, that's, what's the whole point of all that? And then verse 25 and 20 through 27 tells us about Absalom. Now in all Israel, there is no one to be praised so much for his beauty as Absalom. From the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. When he cut the hair of his head, for the end of every year he used to cut it, when it was heavy on him, he cut it. He weighed the hair in his head 200 shekels by the king's weight, about 5 pounds. And there was born Absalom 3 sons and 1 daughter, whose name was Tamar, and she was a beautiful woman. So here you got Absalom, and he's a good-looking guy. He has that nice long hair. You got 3 sons and a daughter. And notice he named his daughter Tamar. He named his daughter after his sister, her aunt. And remember how his sister was very beautiful, and his daughter is very beautiful. He names her Tamar. And this is kind of like a reminder to folks of what happened between Tamar and that half-brother. And then verse 28. So Absalom lived 2 full years in Jerusalem without coming to the king's presence. Then Absalom said for Joab, send him to the king, but Joab would not come. He said a second time, but Joab would not come. Then he said to his servants, look, Joab's field is next to mine. He has barley there. Go and set it on fire. And so Absalom gets tired waiting to see the king, his dad. He talks to Joab. Joab won't do anything about it, so he sets Joab's fields on fire. That'd be like in our culture, and somebody didn't do you a favor, and you set their hay field on fire, or maybe their cornfield. You get their attention. And Joab, of course, is very upset about this. And so Joab agrees to talk to the king. And it says, and the king summoned Absalom. So he came to the king, prostrated himself with his face before the ground for the king. And the king kissed Absalom. And you think, and they live happily ever after, the end. But that is not what happened. Absalom had a very rebellious spirit. And you notice he was willing to do just about anything in his own way. Whether it was killing somebody or vandalizing, burning somebody's crops down. And in verse chapter 15, rather, we see how Absalom would start building a show. He got a chariot and horses and 50 men, and he would stand at the road of the gate leading up to Jerusalem. And he would talk to people who was coming up to Jerusalem for judgment. You know, you go to the king for judgment. And Absalom was there kind of running, well, as we would say, interference. And he'd say, hey there, who are you? Where are you from? Oh, my name's Herb from the tribe of Hoffman. Oh, Herb from the tribe of Hoffman, what are you doing here? Oh, I got a lawsuit I want to file against one of my neighbors. Oh, well, I'm sorry, Herb, but the king doesn't have anybody to help out with that. No, you're just out of luck, buddy. You need to go back home. Now, if I was king, though, it'd be different. If I was king, you file that lawsuit, you come out ahead, you come out on top. Why, next week, you'd be living in Curtis's house in that lawsuit. You come out on top of that lawsuit. And then talk about how the people would lift out their hands, you know, and he would lift out their hands and people would kiss them. And so you think about this, you got this good-looking guy with his good-looking words. And I'm sure all those ladies, they went there when they were kissing his hand, you know, and he had all those sweet words. I mean, it still works today. You can make somebody, they get hooked up with somebody because they have sweet words. But you know, you can't eat sweet words. You can't drive sweet words. You can't sleep in the bed of sweet words. Now, when somebody else want to start a relationship with and you have a bunch of sweet words, I say, I hear you on sweet words, but you have a job to go along with that sweet words. And here's the key verse. Thus Absalom did to every Israelite who came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the people of Israel. So not only did he steal the hearts of the women with all his good looks, he stole the hearts of the men with his words. Oh, king don't have nobody, but now the ice king, you come out on top. I'll take care of this. And then this goes on for about 4 years. So Absalom goes to the palace and tells his dad, please let me go to Hebron and pay the vow I made to the Lord, for I told the Lord, no, if I could ever go back to Jerusalem, I would come back and worship him in Hebron. And King David said, well, go in peace. Absalom told his dad, I need to go to Hebron. I need to go to church. But listen to this. But Absalom sent secret messengers throughout the tribes of Israel, saying, as soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then shout, Absalom become king of Hebron. In other words, you hear that trumpet sound, I'm not holding revival. I'm setting up my kingdom. And Absalom was so tricky that he invited 200 men from Jerusalem and said they were innocent. They didn't know what was going on. So there's Absalom with his men, with these 200 men. And then it says, while Absalom was offering sacrifices, he sent for Ahithophel, David's counselor from the city of Gilal. Now, if you study the scriptures, you will find out that this guy, Ahithophel, you probably don't know him, but you probably heard of his granddaughter. His granddaughter is Bathsheba, the lady who was married to Uriah the Hittite, whom David had an affair with, and then later had her husband killed. This man has a grudge against David. From his point of view, David has dishonored his granddaughter, and he's been waiting a long time for the perfect moment for vengeance. And thus, a conspiracy grew in strength, and the people with Absalom kept increasing. So verse 13 talks about a messenger comes to the hearts of the Israelites going after Absalom. And David said to the officials with him in Jerusalem, get up, let us flee, there will be no escape from Absalom. Hurry over soon, overtake us, and bring disaster down upon us, and attack the city with the edge of the sword. And the king's officials said to the king, your servants are ready to do whatever our lord and king decides. And so David's attitude is, we need to get out of Jerusalem quickly, okay? Now, remember, David's a military man, so he's thinking, I don't want to be in Jerusalem. Jerusalem, that's going to mean fighting from house to house. You know, we're seeing that on the news right now over in Gaza. They said, we need to get out of Jerusalem. We need to get out in the countryside. And so they go out in the countryside, and they're hiding. And verse 30 said, but David went up to ascend the Mount of Olives. Okay, we know about the Mount of Olives, don't we? Weeping as he went, with his head covered and walking barefoot, all the people were with him, covering their heads and went weeping as they went. David was told that Ahithophel was among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Lord, I pray you, turn the counsel of Aphlaloth into foolishness. And so when David hears that one of his counselors has turned against him, he prays, Lord, turn his words into foolishness.
Okay.
And then we get to chapter 16. We got a lot going on here as well. And verse 5, we have a guy by the name of Shimei from the house of Saul. And he comes out, and verse 5 tells us he came out cursing. And verse 6 says he threw stones at David and all the servants of King David. Now all the people and all the warriors on his right and on his left. And Shimei shouted, he cursed, Out, out, murderer, scoundrel. The Lord has avenged on you all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has given the kingdom to the hand of your son Absalom. See, disaster has overtaken you, for you are a man of blood. And so here's David retreating from Jerusalem, and this guy comes out, curses him out, throwing rocks at him, and says, You're a bloody man, murderer. You deserve this, because you killed King Saul and his sons and stole that throne from him. The only problem was David didn't steal the throne from King Saul. Saul was so wicked and disobedient that the Lord took the throne from Saul and gave it to David. And so here you have this guy, Shimei, throwing rocks and cursing David, saying he's a bloody man. Okay. And then verse 20. Meanwhile, back in Jerusalem, Absalom has taken over Jerusalem. He asked Ahithophel, Give us counsel. What should I do? Ahithophel said to Absalom, Go into your father's concubines, the one he has left to look after the house, and all the Israel will hear that you have made yourself odious and your father, in the hands of those you will be strengthened. So they pitched a tent for Absalom upon the roof, and Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel. Now remember, David and Bathsheba, David was on top of the roof of the palace and saw Bathsheba, and that's all that emotion. But now here's her grandfather telling Absalom, Absalom, sit you a tent out here and have all these women go inside a tent, and then you go in next. And this way folks know you're now the king. And that old man did that out of vengeance. He didn't care for Absalom, but he was trying to get back at David for what he'd done to his granddaughter. Then chapter 17 starts off, the same advisor, Bathsheba's grandfather, says, Let me choose 12,000 men, and I'll set out and pursue David tonight. I will come upon him while he is weary and discouraged and throw him into panic, and all the people who are with him will flee, and I will strike down only the king. And I will bring all the people back to you as a bride comes home to her husband. But you seek the life of only one man, and all the people will be at peace. So he says, King, give me 12,000 soldiers. I'll go down there. I'll kill David. Problem solved. We just need David. That's all we need to kill. Well, Absalom calls another guy, and he says, the counsel that Absalom has given is not good. Verse 8 says, You know your father and his men are warriors, and they're enraged like a bear off her cubs in the fields. Besides, your father's an expert at war. He will not spend the night with the troops. Even now, he has hid himself in one of the pits, some other place. And some of our troops follow the first attack. Whoever hears it will say, There has been a slaughter among the troops who follow Absalom. Then even the valiant warrior's heart is like the heart of a lion where every man in fear. For all Israel knows that your father is a warrior, and that those who are with him are valiant warriors. But my counsel is that all Israel be gathered to you, from Dan to Beersheba, like sand in the sea, for multitude, and that you go to battle in person. And so, this guy is playing on Absalom's vanity. Oh, Absalom, don't do that. You know David's a great warrior, war hero. My advice is you should lead the battle. You go after him and bring the soldiers with you. And Absalom thought, well, this is a good ideal. But listen to what verse 14 says. For the Lord ordained to defeat the good counsel of Absalom, so the Lord might bring ruin on Absalom. And while Absalom didn't realize, so that guy was actually on King David's side. And Absalom, in his arrogance, forgot a small detail. David had been a general, a fighter, a warrior, commander-in-chief. Absalom, I don't think, did one thing in battle. He was an amateur. This is like having the JV team go against Michael Jordan. It was going to be a disaster. And David Mirror, he was an expert at the battles out in the open plains, the war, and fields. When Absalom marched out of Jerusalem, he was leaving the place of safety and walking the place where he could be destroyed. But he was so arrogant and so foolish, he did not realize that. And so it's during this time that this psalm of David is written. And I'm sure many of you heard that song called, "But Thou, O Lord, Showed to Me." Oh, many are they that rise against me, Lord. Many are they that rise up against me. Many are they that say, there is no help for him in God. But thou, O Lord, art shield to me, the glory and lifter of my head. I cried to the Lord, and he heard me from his holy mountain. I lay down and sleep, and I wake up again, for the Lord sustains me. In other words, David's attitude was, Lord, you're my shield, my protector. I'm going to go to bed tonight and get a good night's sleep. And tomorrow morning, we're going to take care of business. And then chapter 18, verse 1, David mustered the men who were with him and set them over commanders of thousands, commanders of hundreds. And they divided the army into three groups. And so you see where David is getting back to the old David we know. He's taking command. He's being decisive. He's getting the David we knew, the war hero. And then David, in verse 5, orders Joab and some others and say, deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom. And all the people heard the king gave orders to all commanders concerning Absalom. And they said, I want you to take Absalom alive. Okay? And so the armies went out in the field against Israel, and the battles fought in the forest of Ephraim. The men of Israel were defeated there by the servants of David, and the slaughter there was great on that day, 20,000 men. The battle spread over the face of all the country, and the force claimed more victims that day than the sword. You know, here in our own country, we have what's called the Battle of the Wilderness, and the woods is a hard place to fight a battle. You know, if you talk to a Vietnam veteran in the jungles of Vietnam, how difficult it is to fight your enemy. And so they're fighting this battle. Absalom's army is getting wiped out. And Absalom, bless his heart, he's riding on a mule. And he's going through the woods, to the forest. And here's all these low-hanging branches. And he's riding so quickly that he runs into a tree and his head gets stuck to the branches. And so you had this image of there's Absalom on this branch dangling like a little toy, so no, he can't get loose. No. And so one of the David soldiers saw it and tell Joab, said, I saw Absalom hanging in an oak. And Joab said, why didn't you kill him? And he said, we can't do that. The king said not to. And Absalom said, I will waste no time like this with you. And Joab took three spears in his hand and thrust into the heart of Absalom while he was still alive in the oak. And then the 10 young men, Joab's armor bearers, surrounded Absalom and struck him and killed him. So now Absalom's dead. And then we also learned that his advisor, Bathsheba's grandfather, hung himself. Okay. And then Joab sounded the trumpet, and the troops came back from pursuing Israel, for Joab restrained the troops. And then here's a moment I feel a certain amount of pity, but also a little bit of disgust with. When David hears that his son has died, it said the king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept as he went. And he said, oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would have died instead of you, oh, Absalom, my son and son. And it talks about how that the soldiers lost morale, like, what? This guy tried to kill us, and the king's crying over him. And Joab, in verse 5, chapter 19, says, to the king, "Today you have covered with shame the face of all your officers who saved your life today, and the lives of your sons and daughters, and the lives of your wives and concubines. For love of those who hate you and hatred of those who love you, you made clear today that commanders and officers are nothing to you. For I perceive that Absalom were alive and all of us were dead today, then you would be greatly pleased." And so Joab takes David to the woodshed and says, "This is ridiculous. Your son tried to kill us in battle. Quit crying over him and go out and thank your troops." And David realized he was right and went out there and did the right thing and thanked his troops and kind of restored himself in their eyes. And then on the way back to Jerusalem, guess who the first person to come out to welcome David back home? Shimei. Shimei's son Gera fell down before the king as he about to cross the Jordan and said to the king, "May the Lord not hold me guilty. Remember how your servant did wrong on this day that my lord the king left Jerusalem. May the king not bear in mind, for your servant has sinned. And therefore, see, I have come this day, the first of all the house of Joseph, to come down to meet my lord the king." And one of David's men says, "King, can we go ahead and kill this man now?" And David said, "Not today. Today is not the day of vengeance." And what will happen to Shimei is, when David's on his deathbed, he'll warn his son Solomon, "You need to watch this guy, and as soon as he messes up, you need to take him out." Now, what about us this morning? Do you feel like you're in a situation where all your enemies come out of the woodwork? David had a son turned against him. He had an advisor turned against him. He had one of Saul's relatives come out and curse him and call him bloody man, saying, "You're being punished by God for stealing this throne." And as they wrote in his psalm, "Many they to say, there is no help for him in God." Have you ever been in a situation that was so messy, folks looked at you like, "Man, he's in trouble now, she's in trouble, God can't help them"? Well, you got to be like David. "But thou, O Lord, art shield to me, my glory, and lift of my head." David realized that his strength came not from the battle, but it came from the Lord. And in doing so, he won the great victory. And then finally, I'll just add, we need to be careful about the consequences of sin. Isn't it interesting how that when David's infant son died, they could rise up and eat a meal and say, "My son has died. He can't come to me, but I'll come to him." He had that sense of hope of the resurrection, life. I'll meet him again. But Absalom, because he died after committing such great sins, it said he wept and no one could console him. And I kind of suspect David thought, "My son died in such a manner I might not ever see him ever again because of the life of sin he lived." No, and that's a very difficult conversation to have at the funeral home of someone, to think that a person died without knowing the Lord, without knowing Christ. And that very, 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 very well may be the last time you saw their physical body and saw them. No, we don't have to talk about that much in church, but I find it interesting that with one son, David found hope and comfort in his death. With this son, he could find no comfort, and he just wept bitterly. And so all of us should be living lives that when we die, our loved ones know where we're at, know how to be with us and join us. And at this time, we now have a song of invitation, Armored Christian Soldiers. Be mindful that our altar is always open for prayer and dedication. Should a person want to become a Christian. And you're invited to open your red hymnal to page 372, Armored Christian Soldiers. Again, this is page 372, the red hymnal, Onward, Christian Soldiers.